Elsie May's Canning and Pies, freshly baked apple, pumpkin, and chocolate mini pies, drink mixes, and much more. The market is open on and along 2nd Avenue and Plaza Douay Saturdays from 9 until 2.
The Gateway Radio Reading Service is for visually impaired listeners who'd like to have local newspapers and books read to them. In the Kenosha-Racine area, specially tuned, easy-to-operate radios are available free of charge. Visit WGTD.org or dial 564-3870.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WGTD is available 24 hours a day on your desktop or laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz HD2 is available via HD radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good Saturday morning to you. You've tuned in to Education Matters, as you just heard, and my name is Mike Keough. I'm one of your rotating hosts, and with me this morning are Cheryl Hernandez, the director of the Kenosha Literacy Council. And Cheryl was also with us last week for a discussion on some related issues. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
Now everybody can recognize your voice. This not being television, we can't put your name on when you speak. And Yolanda Santos Adams, a community activist for many years with UMOS, the Urban League, Spanish Center, League of Latin American Citizens, and many other activities that you've been involved in the past, and Yolanda has an announcement to make today.
Yes, this is Yolanda Adams, and first I want to say good morning, good Saturday morning to both of you. And yes, I am retiring as the president and CEO of the Urban League of Racine and Kenosha, an affiliate of the National Urban League. I retired on Friday, so I'm sorry. It's the 29th was my last day.
So, one of those situations sometimes when you retire, but you end up coming back to and answering a lot of phone calls and helping out for a while. I hope you're able to make a clean break of it because you've done yeoman service to this community, especially the Hispanic community. Well, we're gathering today because it's Hispanic Heritage Appreciation Month as well as National Literacy Month, and those two topics pretty much overlap with one another, and there's sort of a symbiotic relationship between the two. They tend to support one another. So I thought maybe we'd put some things together. It's especially important given today's political environment with all the concerns about immigration and so on. Yolanda, I came to Kenosha in 1970 and had some involvement with the Hispanic community in Milwaukee as a volunteer with the Guadalupe Center. But when I came here, there was not a very large Hispanic demographic to the population of Kenosha, and a lot of that has changed, and I can't think of anybody better qualified to give us some sort of a history of that than you.
Sure. I've actually been here since 1954, so I preceded you by quite a number of years. Grew up here. I was born in San Antonio, Texas. My parents came from San Antonio to work at, my father came to work at American Motors. So that's that auto plant is what brought a lot of the people from San Antonio to Kenosha. You're correct. Population was pretty small back then. There were two Santos families in Kenosha, Irene Santos, as many know her, and our family. So things have changed quite a bit. I think a lot of the issues are still the same. A lot of the people still need have basic needs. They need food, shelter, and clothing. And but what we're seeing, I think, a little different now is instead of migrant workers, we're seeing the people from Mexico actually come to the States. And it's a little bit different than it used to be. I think part of the challenge, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later, but you know, the challenge is there was a Spanish Center back then. Everybody remembers going through the Spanish Center when they first arrived in Kenosha. And that nonprofit agency no longer exists. So it's a new challenge for the people here.
That just reminds me of something I had totally forgotten. And that is, I got involved. I had the experience of working with Yolanda many times. And I don't know how the Spanish, Hispanic community is going to get along without her. But I got on the board of the Spanish Center because I was, for one reason or another, I was with Tony Garcia one evening, and I was talking to him, and I had applied for a job in Wautoma at one time, and had to stay overnight, and ended up watching a Spanish movie with English language subtitles at the Teresa Theater in Wautoma, and Tony had been very familiar with that because his family had worked there on an annual basis, and so maybe that's only important to Tony and I, but this change in demographics that affects you. That's where you come in, Cheryl.
Absolutely. So we serve two different kinds of students at the Kenosha Literacy Council. All the students that we serve are adults. We serve about 600 adult learners a year. About 80% of those students are English language learners. The other 20% are American-born English-speaking folks who are learning basic reading and writing skills to go on to study for their GED. But the 80% who are English language learners come from all over the world. Last year, our students represented 40 different countries, but the majority of them are coming from Spanish-speaking countries. And so that's the main demographic that we see at the Literacy Council, and we have the privilege of helping them learn English, but also learning about our community and how to be actively involved in our community.
I can say, again, this is Yolanda, from my experience with the different bilingual programs that are offered in our communities and in our schools, that the best program has always been the dual language program. When I was served on Kenosha Unified School District, we found that model to be the most successful as far as the Spanish speakers learning English quickly and the English speakers learning Spanish. So I just wonder, at the Literacy Council, are you offering the dual language model versus the ESL and some of the other models?
Well, and I think it depends on if you're working with children or with adults. And so in our case, we work with adults, and our research shows us that kind of the idea of immersion is the best, most efficient way for adult learners to learn a new language, and so that's what we focus on. I think the other part of that is we serve students from all over the world. So in any one class, we have students from multiple countries who speak different languages. And so it's really neat to see that everyone has that common bond of trying to learn English together. So at the Literacy Council, we do all of our programming in English.
Okay. The diversity thing. When I first came to town, when I first got involved with the Spanish Center, the population was pretty much people who migrated from other areas of the United States. And over the years that I was on the board, that changed drastically as we started getting, for a couple of years, there were a lot of people from El Salvador and Honduras and then from Guatemala. I remember one time we had some people didn't like the fact that we had a secretary who was from Cuba. That acquainted me with the vast diversity of subcultures, if you might say, diversity in history that these people come with.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Again, this is Yolanda. it really did change. The migration used to be from Texas. My family and friends of my family, and we're like four generations now, they mostly came from Texas or Arizona or New Mexico. So as you said, we're getting more people in from either some of the South American countries or Mexico, coming over the border from Mexico. So there is a major difference in that. I mean, it's even a culture difference. And I'm just going to use the people from Texas that are non-English speakers or limited English profession. It's a little bit more difficult, I think, when you come from Mexico than when you come from the States and you're a citizen. So the challenges are different, and the old way of teaching, I think, ESL and some of these other models needs to change also, because with the language barrier that comes with the people from Mexico are some other different cultural differences. The music is different. The music's not the same if you're from Texas or if you're from Mexico. So everything has to change with the new migration. And I don't think that the models that we used 20 years ago for the Spanish speaking are the ones we should be using today. I think we really need to update those.
Do you think that our schools are prepared to deal with that kind of diversity? I'm trying to think of a dual language program. I believe that one of our teachers in the dual language program is not from Mexico. Is that correct? Are you familiar with them?
I'm not familiar because I haven't kept up with what's happening at the district, but I know there's still a major need for more resources for those teachers. So resources in both languages has always been a problem for school districts around the country. I don't think we get enough of that, and there's definitely not enough support for the teachers or the programs. There's been numerous Office of Civil Rights complaints filed over the different bilingual programs, and I really do not believe they've improved enough to satisfy those complaints. So there's still a lot of work to be done around serving that population.
Something that I'm sure you see, Cheryl, that I saw during the 2 years that I worked at Edward Maine School of Language and Art, and that is the public has certain misconceptions about immigrants, particularly Hispanic immigrants. Edward Maine School of Language and Art was also a community learning center, and the parents of all those students were coming there in the evening, and we set up an evening care facility in the school for that, because they were so dedicated to learning English. I mean,
absolutely.
And the experience that I have had in the various jobs I've had with the district, dealing with kids who come from Hispanic families, a lot of them, are like they're in between first and third generations, and they have mm-hmm. one foot in one generation and one foot in the other, but they have those American family values that people talk about that we don't see that often, even in any ethnic group. I mean, their kids take pride in their learning. They don't want to embarrass their families by not working. They may have some difficulties because of this language, but they work hard. I work in the field of special education. The kids I work with are not behavior problems. They have some educational barriers to overcome, and they work hard to do that.
Absolutely. Our students, our adult learners at the Literacy Council, know how important education is. They know that that's the step that they need to take to make their lives better, and they are wanting to be good role models for their children. So they know that they need to come here, they need to learn English, they might want to study some career field, and certainly we help them, get involved with Gateway so that they can do that. But I think the main part of it is that they want to be able to help their children be successful in school. They want to be able to communicate with the teachers at school, communicate with their children's doctors, get the community resources that they need. And so they know how important English is to all of that. And as they're doing all of that, as they're studying, they're coming to classes, they're serving as that positive role model for their children, and their children are then more actively involved in school. And so it's a wonderful experience to be a part of that. And we have family literacy nights at the Literacy Council where the families can come and be together and share, different parts of their culture and learn about new cultures. And so I think that that's really an exciting part of what we do as well.
And they want independence and the self-respect that comes from that too.
Definitely, of course. Everyone does.
I was doing some reading last evening in connection with this topic today, and I was following up on something I heard on National Public Radio having to do with Hispanic immigration into the United States. And a couple of things were really surprising. One of which was the Pew Trust has done some research with statistics from the Census Bureau as to which states, for example, they had a statistic as to which states have the highest numbers of incoming immigrants. Can you imagine which ones they would be? Which ones would you think they would be from your experience?
California, Texas,
New
Florida.
New Mexico and
New York.
Texas.
Florida is number one.
Oh, yes.
That and that, that makes sense, although I didn't think Florida first either. Mm-hmm. Alabama is number two. And having lived in Alabama, it was something I posted on the Facebook site that we have for this program. It had to do with the a teacher in rural Alabama, a principal in rural Alabama, who was in all the troubles he dealt with because of the indigenous population in his area. In rural South, you're dealing really small areas. The county I lived in has only 15,000 people in it. Not willing to accept these folks, and you basically had a triad. You have blacks, and you had whites, and you had Hispanics, and where did the Hispanics fit in? And this man had done some wonderful things to keep his school going and keep it integrated, because one of the things you have in rural South is that you still have segregated schools. Just simultaneously with that, late at night on National Public Radio, they were running a series about Hispanic immigration in the South, and they're talking about the difficulties that Hispanics were having and how they were moving from the rural areas. Even though they may have come for a job in a rural area, at their earliest opportunity, they would move to a larger city because there would be more opportunities for them there, like the kinds of things that you offer.
Mm-hmm.
And groups like you work with, Yolanda,
right,
that would provide them with some assistance.
We still do have the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC, councils nationwide and in Puerto Rico. I just hope our council members in Puerto Rico are okay. We have a lot of LULAC members that come from Puerto Rico. I think you still have to have that neighborhood center, an agency like the Literacy Council or the Spanish Center that offers programs. LULAC will, of course, address some of the civil rights violations. And what's good about LULAC is all of the scholarship fundraising that goes on through LULAC councils and encouraging educational attainment through LULAC initiatives and computer labs and things like that. But I think that what we're seeing at go away is the actual agencies where they're fully bilingual and they can walk in and there's people that look like them like we used to see at the Spanish Center and where the people can go in there and have a certain comfort level that everybody there speaks Spanish. And I think that's what we need to try to revive a little bit of that because they seem to be dispersed in little pockets all over the city. So We have some at the Urban League. We have a Hispanic Center program at the Urban League that I just left. We have one in Racine funded by the Racine Community Foundation. The Literacy Council in Racine also has some programs, so Gateway has programs. So we got all these little pockets, but we really don't have a nonprofit organization like they have in Milwaukee, like United Migrant Opportunity Services, the big UMOS, or like UCC, or their big Spanish center. So in Kenosha Racine, we lack that Spanish center type of an organization that I think is still needed today.
I would say, based on my experience too, that especially with Hispanics, it's true of immigrants generally, but Hispanics, a sense of community is really important to them. The community, their neighborhood, their mm-hmm. church, that's a central part of their culture, which those of us who have histories in this country that go back a lot farther, we've gotten away from that. We move away from our families when we get jobs, and we don't depend on each other. We don't stay together. We don't help each other out the way they do.
And I think that's one of the things that we try to develop at the Literacy Council. We help that the students develop that sense of community, and they often tell us, you know, this is their family away from their family and their second home, and they feel comfortable there. And we need the students to feel that so that they can take risks in learning. And so we work to develop that sense of community with our students in many different ways. And we have student advisory councils where they help us and give feedback and help mentor kind of the newer students. And so that's all an important part of what we do. And I think it's also important that we're not just teaching English, although that's an important part of what we do, but we're really working through experiences to help our students become actively involved in the community. So we have lots of hands-on experiential learning at the Literacy Council, and we're out in the community. They're, you know, visiting the courthouse or the fire station or a city council meeting or touring a public school or Parkside. They're learning about banking, and they're learning about healthcare and how, you know, things are different or similar in their own country. And they're using the resources in our community, and we're helping them hopefully feel more comfortable so that they're able to then independently do those things on their own. If we go on a field trip with our families to the museum, and then the next week they're able to take their families there on their own, they've learned how to access a new resource in our community. And so we're always working to do things like that.
Yeah, I think what I was getting at was that we need more than just programs, though. We need so 600 people served in a year. Urban League serves about 8,000 people a year. We need an organization whose primary mission, whose target group is Spanish-speaking individuals first and foremost, but, of course, serving everybody. But we need a full nonprofit organization like the traditional Spanish centers that offer an array of services, an array of programs for Spanish-speaking and limited English proficient individuals, and not just these, programs at different organizations. So you have one here and one there that they can go to. But I think we need a building that they can go to.
Okay, and then the difficulty with that is, as you well know, is that there is so much work involved just in keeping such an organization going, because you're always writing grants and holding little fundraisers and doing other things just to keep it in existence.
True.
And how is your agency financed? How do you keep what you're doing?
The Kenosha Literacy Council is a nonprofit organization, so we're funded just like any other nonprofit organization. We write grants, we receive funding from donations, and we have special events throughout the year.
And do you have any coming up in the near future?
We have two big fundraisers every year. We have a spelling bee in the spring, which is a fun competition between adults, actually. Different businesses sponsor teams of adults to be in a spelling competition. And then we also, in the summertime, do a 5K run walk. So those are our main fundraisers. But this is, as you mentioned earlier, Literacy Awareness Month. September is Literacy Awareness Month. So we've done a different little event each week to try to raise a little bit of money, but more about raising awareness for literacy. And so our final event, it was held this week, and then we also have some events happening for Hispanic Heritage Month. So we're working this year with the Kenosha Public Library to sponsor a series of events for Hispanic Heritage Month. And there are two of those events left, one on Tuesday, October 3rd, where we have a panel of our students who are talking about their experiences as immigrants. So that one will be very interesting. And then on Tuesday, September 10th, we're having a book discussion based around the book Into the Beautiful North. And so folks can find information about those two events on our Facebook page.
Okay, and I believe that there's an event which is in the future as we're taping this, but will be over with by the time we're on the air, and that is that something that the library is doing with a dreamer.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us something about that if you can?
I don't know a lot about it, actually. I just know that it's they're hosting a workshop to help people fill out the paperwork that they need for.
Right.
They're working.
The DACA applications mm-hmm. have to be filed by October 5th,
right,
which is coming up very closely. And a lot of people need assistance with that because anytime you deal with the government, you have to bring papers with you. Even going to get a driver's license now, you need to bring your birth certificate and other things, and people
you
are having to
do.
Go home and mm-hmm. write for those and get them. But
so volunteers from the CUSH organization are meeting at the library to help people with that paperwork.
Right, and the note I have here is that anyone listening to this will have missed the session, but they can contact St. Mark's Church Outreach for additional information at 262-656-7370.
And certainly if they contact the Literacy Council, we'll get them to the right place as well.
All right. What would, to both of you, what do you think is the biggest single topical need that needs to be offered to the Hispanic community, immigrant community? What do you think is the biggest... their biggest need that is perhaps being underfulfilled or unfulfilled?
Sure. Well, from our adult learners that we see at the Literacy Council, they come to us with two main goals in mind, the first being jobs, work-related things, and the other parenting. And so, you know, learning English will help with both of those, and those are goals that we focus on. But that's what they come to us saying. You know, they want to improve their job or find a new job. They might want to begin career study, and so they need English skills in order to do that. And then the other major goal is parenting and being able to help their children with school, and so resources that we can give them to help them do that adequately.
Since we don't really have a community center for Hispanics, as we, which was a need we tried to serve at the Spanish Center, where are some places, Yolanda, where people can call who have problems, where they can trust that they're going to get an honest answer or someone who's going to have the information that they need?
Yes, they can actually go on the LULAC-Wisconsin website, and that's the state of Wisconsin LULAC contact info is out there, and it will list out the councils, the local councils in Kenosha and Racine. There's a couple in each one, and in Milwaukee, and who the council president is. We're seeing more the fear of the deportations and the abuse of some of the undocumented, even in mobile parks here in Kenosha, where they're being threatened and they're keeping their escrow money and things like that in apartments. Because I deal more with the civil rights organization of LULAC and NAACP, I'm seeing more of the civil rights type of violations that the people are experiencing. But that fear of, with the new administration in place, the fear that has really, really risen over the new administration in Washington, D.C., and its, forceful way of wanting to remove everybody. That is not current with their documentation. So I think there's a big need to help people with their, make sure that their green cards aren't expiring and make sure that they get referred to honest and good immigration attorneys. LULAC has a list of those. There are some immigration attorneys that take advantage of people. So we've already filtered those out. And so I think going to LULAC, Wisconsin, is going to be a good resource for them, but they would have to get on the Internet, and that's where they go to their nonprofits. If they don't have Internet access, they can go to their local
Any
nonprofit.
Any public library will
or the library and get on the Internet and do LULAC-Wisconsin or LULAC.org, which is the national office, and they can get a hold of their local representatives.
Again, LULAC is, the acronym stands for what?
League of United Latin American Citizens, and it is a civil rights organization similar to NAACP. And so if there's anyone that feels that they need some help with their rights being, or they're being taken advantage of, or their rights are being, you know, they're being their civil rights are being violated, then they should contact LULAC.
I know that it's so difficult to find good representation in the immigration field, particularly if you're working with with incoming immigrants. It's hard to find someone who an attorney who is willing to do that kind of work, because it requires a special expertise, and
yes, it does.
It requires a whole lot of work just to stay current and know who to call and things like that. Mm-hmm. But there's not a lot of money in it. Immigrants generally don't have money. And most of the people that I know who were, when I was trying to help people with immigration problems, who were immigration attorneys, were dealing with higher-end clients in business and that sort of thing, and were not willing to help out on a consistent basis of people with a lower income level. So it's I can understand why people would have concerns and suspicions dealing with this complicated area of the law and wondering whether they're going to be able to get good legal help and adequate and complete legal advice.
Right. And another area of concern is the driver's license issue, as we know.
Yes.
That's a big one. I know Mike Gravely has been addressing that here in Kenosha County, the need for some assistance to the individuals that need to get to work and back and don't have aren't able to apply for a legal driver's license. So I know Kenosha County is the DA's office is really, really working well on that. I don't know how far they've gotten with a program that they started here about 6 months ago. I've kind of lost contact with them, but I'd like to hear from the DA's office to see where they're at with that program to help people with the driver's license problem.
Yeah, it is rather difficult. I'm even having a problem with mine because of a typographical error that somebody made way back 30 years ago on my driver's license. I've got to bring additional documentation just to renew my license, and it's difficult to get my birth certificate because there's some sort of a problem with the clerk's office in Marinette County.
Right, and the driver's license now says not for federal purposes in the little top right-hand corner.
Right.
And until you have brought in your birth certificate and whatever other documents the DMV is requiring, they will not remove that. And I think we got about another, maybe not even a year, before you have to have that removed from your driver's license to be able to board a plane with that ID. So I don't think people are even aware of that. That might be a topic for another Saturday morning, Mike. But the deadline is approaching. It's going to sunset. There was a little bit of a extension granted. But I think just about everybody has that driver's license now that says not for federal purposes on it and are not aware that you need to go in with your birth certificate and get that taken off of there.
It occurs to me that there's something we haven't touched on because we've been focusing on the needs of the Hispanic immigrant community. And that is that the need of the community that's already here, the Anglo community or whatever you want to call it, for these folks who are coming. And that was brought home to me when I was, you know, I don't have cable television, so I wanted to watch some Milwaukee Brewers games. Couldn't get them on my antenna. But I was able to get Telemundo, and Telemundo was broadcasting it in Brewers games in Spanish. Hmm. So I was able to get the games there, and I was really impressed by the number of employers who are advertising, particularly Amazon, Amazon is heavily advertising in the Milwaukee area for Hispanic employees. And they aren't afraid at all of Hispanic employees, and they certainly aren't afraid of their work ethic if they're doing this. They were holding a job fair in Milwaukee County and inviting people to come to their job fair to learn about the opportunities in Kenosha County.
Interesting.
I think one of the things that we've seen recently is people from the Kenosha community wanting to step up and to make more of an impact in the community and show support for immigrants. And so we've seen just this year an increase in the number of people that want to come and be volunteers for our organization, which I think is wonderful. So they, you know, with everything that's happening and in the news, and they want a way to be actively involved in our community and make the situation better and show their support for immigrants. And so, you know, they might do that by volunteering or donating to our organization, but we've definitely seen an increase in that. And so I think there's a lot of support for the immigrants in our community, and I think that our community is only stronger because of the diversity that they all bring. And so I'm happy to see that our community is supporting that.
Yes, Cheryl was on Education Matters last weekend talking about different aspects of her program, and as I was listening to that, I was really astonished at the tremendous resource you have with volunteers.
Yes, absolutely. We have we utilize about 200 volunteers a year, and they give thousands of hours of their time to teach our students English and reading and writing skills. So most all of the instruction at the Literacy Council is done by those trained volunteers. We have some classes that are provided by paid instructors, but all of our tutoring and small group classes are all done by trained volunteers. So it's amazing the impact that they're making in our community.
I want to make sure before we end, and I think we're getting close to the end of this program, although our engineer has left us briefly for something I'm sure was very important. Are there, I usually ask at the end and before the end of our programs, are there any things that we haven't covered here that you would like to see us deal with while we're on the air?
Well, I think we probably need to, on another show maybe, I don't think we have enough time on this show, but the one that pops in my mind is the DACA, and everybody really, really needs to understand why we need to keep these students here and not deport them. So I think that's the burning issue of the day, and I think it's captured all of our hearts as far as these students are concerned and these young adults. So I just would like to see the community really, really have a good understanding of, you know, the urgent need to address that problem.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I have had students come to me and former students call me who know that I used to practice law and did some immigration law, and with genuine anxiety as to what's going to happen in their family. And they really don't have any basis for knowing that that someone in their family may be undocumented. They just have heard so much talk about it that in the cases that that I'm thinking of, I don't think those families have any problem at all, except that they're afraid. They don't trust our government. One young man was worried that his older brother, who this young man was born in this country, but his older brother was born in I won't say what country. I don't want to identify him in any way, but that his older brother might possibly have to go back, or that his father might have to go back, and then. There's another student who's the plan in their family, they come from a fairly well-to-do family in Jalisco, Mexico. The plan was always that his grandparents would come to the United States and retire here. And by any standard, they would be welcomed here. They're economically self-sufficient and fine, upstanding people, with relatives here and connections to the community. But the grandparents have decided to stay in Jalisco, of all places, which is not the nicest place to live, because of all the negative press that they hear and all the comments they hear from American politicians about how many bad Mexicans there are. They don't want to be here if that's the kind of an atmosphere that they're going to come here.
Yeah, and I think that's another major problem that we need to talk about too, is that hatred we've seen increase over the Mexican immigrant, not other immigrants, but the Mexican immigrant. How do we stop that? Because it just like overnight, they've been on attack since recently. We just never seen such spewing of hate towards undocumented or documented immigrants. And I think we need to all work really hard to make sure that does not continue.
I think at the Literacy Council, part of what we are trying to do is create a safe place for our students to know that they can come there and learn and be comfortable in that space. And certainly we work to help them access whatever resources they need. So we have a literacy advocate position that helps them access different community resources if they have legal questions and things like that, help them reach out that way. But also helping our community understand that immigrants make our community stronger, and helping those immigrants become actively involved in our community is beneficial to us all. And so through awareness activities and things, helping our community see the benefit to that and helping them learn from some of our immigrants. And I think that's partly why the panel activity that we have with the library on October 3rd will be great. So if anyone is wanting to hear firsthand from immigrants and hear about their experiences coming here and the kind of trials and things that they've had as they've settled into their lives in Kenosha, that will be a great time to come and learn from them firsthand.
Okay, and my final comment would follow on with what you said and what I said about my my students who came to me, and how concerned I am about the fears that they have, because the three of us, having worked in various aspects of this work with these people, we value these people, we care about them. We know how important they are, and we know how false the impressions that are being created are. And for someone like me, who lived in the South during the last days of Jim Crow and the early days of the Civil Rights Movement, it just brings back of memories of how people get painted with a brush and have to live with it. And it's just so unfortunate that these people that we care about so much should be put through this. And with that, I think we're probably out of time. And so I want to remind everyone that we have a Facebook site, a Facebook page, WGTD Education Matters. And we have an internet site, WGTD.org. And on that internet homepage, you can click on a little button that says Shows, and you can go to Education Matters, and we have an archive there of this show and every other program that we've ever done on Education Matters, our broadcast archive. So with that, I'll thank my guest, Cheryl.
Thank you for having me.
And Yolanda.
Thank you.
And invite everyone to tune in again next week. We'll be a different host, and I don't think we have a topic yet. But
it'll be great.
Yes. And if you know someone who I think might have enjoyed this program or benefited from it, tell them about the archive, and they can go to the WGT website and find a way there, and they can listen to it at their convenience. So with that, we'll thank you and turn this back to our announcer.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, come walk the autumn trails of Hawthorne Hollow October 7th through the 21st while they are donned with poems of the season. Opening reception on October 7th from 2 to 4 p.m. will feature music by Brent Mitchell as well as live poetry.